Good morning, good evening, wherever you are around the world. Thank you for tuning in to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. Sitting in for George Norrie, I'm Dave Schrader. Tonight, Ursula Bielski will join me. Chicago Hauntings. We'll talk about some of the best of the Windy City spirits and some of the Illinois folklore. I grew up in the Chicagoland area. As a matter of fact, had some of my weirdest encounters right there in the Illinois area. And one of the very first photographs I ever captured of a spirit entity was on one of Ursula's tours. She is kind of the queen of the paranormal in the Chicagoland area. And I remember being a part of her tour. We stopped at Hull House. And I took a photograph in through the window. When I got the film back, all the pictures developed. We were going through the pictures, and I thought one of the pictures had been misdeveloped. And my friend said, well, this one's garbage, and threw it across the table at me. And as it spun, when the picture stopped, what looked like a milky haze in the middle of the picture, what I thought was just a garbage artifact from the person that developed the picture, when the picture stopped spinning, it actually revealed that it was a hand reaching towards the window. My friend and I went back to Hull House and took photographs trying to replicate that to see if maybe it was my hand reflecting off the glass, but I'd pushed the camera against the glass. There was enough light in there. I wasn't using my flash to get a weird flashback. And when I reproduced it, every picture would show part of the camera in the hand, and I could not reproduce this exactly. It was amazing and one of the weirder pictures I've ever seen. So being a part of Chicago myself growing up and hearing all of the great legends and lore of things like the Devil Dancer, also, of course, the most famous hitchhiking ghost probably in the world, Resurrection Mary, I knew that I wanted to have Ursula join me one night and talk about these stories, talk about some of the great history of Chicago and why these ghosts would be so prevalent in these areas. Did you know that Oprah Winfrey's offices and studios are supposedly one of the most haunted spots in the Chicagoland area? Plus, you've got the dark history of the Devil in the White City. H.H. Holmes was right there on the site now where the U.S. Post Office sits, was his murder castle. Is there still activity there? Well, those are just some of the stories we're going to cover this evening with our guest Ursula Bielski. So stay tuned. We've got a great show lined up for you. And then later on tonight, open phone lines here on Coast to Coast AM. My guest for the first 2 hours this evening, Ursula Bielski, is the founder of Chicago Hauntings, Inc., and the host of PBS's The Hauntings of Chicago on WYCC. A historian, author, and parapsychology enthusiast, she has been writing and lecturing about Chicago's supernatural folklore and the paranormal for nearly 20 years. She's also recognized as a leading authority on the Chicago region's ghost lore and cemetery history. She's the author of 5 popular books and critically acclaimed books on the same subjects, all published by Lake Claremont Press. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Coast AM, Ursula Bielski. Ursula, thank you for coming on this evening.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Nice to be here.
Yeah, great. You know, I've enjoyed your tours. Every time I've come through Chicago with friends that want to see something with the paranormal, I always recommend hitting up your tours and getting a chance to go see some of these locations. What drew your attention to the haunted phenomena around Chicago?
You know, growing up, I grew up in a haunted house here on the north side of Chicago. My mom still lives in it. She's 88 years old now, and it was a place where we had all sorts of phenomena going on when I was a kid. And at the same time this was happening, I also was lucky to have a father who was really into Chicago history, and he would take me to all different neighborhoods where he had lived. He was also a police officer, and he had worked out of a lot of different police districts around the city, and I was just kind of dragged around everywhere, and I would listen to the adults talk, and they always ended up talking about ghost stories. They're everywhere in Chicago. And that you know, that kind of paranormal folklore is part of so much of what people talk about, and they talk about the old days and memories of the neighborhoods and things. So it was something that was always around me when I was growing up. So while I was having my own experiences at home, I was also learning about the history of Chicago, which is so filled with these stories.
So your father was a cop?
Yeah, he was. He was. He retired out of the Maxwell Street Police District, which is on the near west side. It was, if listeners remember Hill Street Blues, that was the station that was used in the opening credits. And Maxwell Street was known as one of the bloodiest districts, police districts in the world in the late 19th century. There are a lot of ghost stories there. And today, even that police station is the headquarters of the campus police of the University of Illinois at Chicago. And they still have stories about hearing screaming and wailing coming from the old lockup, which was in the basement for so many years when there were so many murders in that area during that time when it was one of the largest ghettos in the world at the end of the 19th century. So, yeah, so this is the kind of the cool stuff I was hearing about when I was a kid.
So your father did believe in the paranormal then?
He did. It was funny. You know, the first night that he and my mom lived in our house, the house was known as the haunted house in the neighborhood when they bought it in the late 60s. And they just kind of blew it off. It was very run down. It was really falling apart. So it looked haunted, and they figured it was the stigma about it because of the way it looked. But the first night they were in the house, they were woken up by the sound of someone literally running back and forth down, up and down the hall upstairs. They were sleeping in the dining room downstairs because the upstairs was really uninhabitable at the time when they moved in. And, you know, he got his service revolver off the nightstand and went through the house, and there was no one there. And he came back. My mom said, he said, "It's spooks, go back to bed." And he said it was something that they encountered all the time as police officers. And I've found that many, many times over my career that police officers encounter stuff like this all the time. And it's something they just talk up to spooks or ghosts or whatever and, you know, go back to bed.
Right. Well, and some police officers, a lot of people don't realize there's kind of an intuitive nature to police officers as well. And, you know, I've come from a family full of police officers and a lot of the cops I know and paranormal teams that have police officers in them, they don't like to talk about that, but there is an intuitive nature to them. Was your father, do you think, kind of sensitive to that as well?
Absolutely he was. And it was very interesting to see that he would have that about him. There were so many instances in his career, like with a lot of police officers, where they will, you know, pull someone over on the street for no reason because they feel that they should and that they, you know, they do a background check and they realize this person is wanted for such and such, whatever. And that was something that we saw with my dad, not only in his work, but we saw it in his life, too. And he was a real down-to-earth Chicago guy, wasn't interested in ghosts or anything like that. But throughout his entire life, he was a very sensitive person. As we talk about the paranormal, when he was growing up, he had a twin brother and who would talk about all the experiences that he and my dad had of seeing their relatives who have passed away and things like that. And even right before my dad passed away in 1986, he took me aside one day and said, "Ursula, I'm going to die. I just wanted to let you know." And I'm like, okay. And sure enough, a couple days later, he had an accident and had, you know, died like a few days later. And the night before the accident, he told my mom that his twin brother was knocking on the window and he had come to get him. Twin brother, of course, had passed away about 6 months earlier. And my mom just blew it off, you know, shrugged it off. And sure enough, again, accident happened. And a few days later, he had passed away. So it was something that even though he didn't, you know, he wasn't interested in the paranormal, wasn't interested in pursuing these sorts of abilities that he had, it was something that was undeniably there throughout his life. And I think it played a big part in him becoming a police officer and being successful at it.
Did, you know, being a tough guy, Chicago guy, my dad is one as well, you know, and then adding to it that he's a cop, was he ever unnerved by any of the paranormal activity that took place in your house?
He didn't seem to be. He seemed to just take it in stride. And I think part of that at some points was putting on a brave face for the rest of it, because sometimes it was a bit unnerving and disconcerting. So I think even he at times was probably a little unhinged by it, but, you know, always put on the face.
Yeah, I would guess. And it's funny when I'll talk to police officers and they'll tell you, you know, they're like, yeah, we'll get called to houses where they'll hear somebody in the attic or in the basement. They'll hear voices and footsteps, and they get called in all the time and sometimes repeatedly to the same home, and there's nobody ever there. And I said, well, do you ever get unnerved going in? And they're always like, as long as my partner's with me, no, but there's no way in hell I'm going down in that basement by myself.
Once they
start hearing the noises. And there's been a few of those stories that have been related. And maybe in the following 2 hours of tonight's show, the last 2 hours, if there are any police officers out there that have had paranormal experiences, I'd love to hear from you as the show progresses. But, a couple of them have told us straight out that they've gone in, they've cleared a location, and they think, well, you know, maybe the homeowner was dreaming, heard something, might have had something to drink that night, and then they begin to hear it themselves. And they'll kind of look at each other and go reinvestigate. There's nothing down there or in the attic. And a lot of these cops have told me there are sometimes they will avoid a call because of that situation, because of those kind of stories.
That to me is just chilling.
Right. Well, it was, you know, funny on our show with Darkness Radio, we were doing a whole show dedicated to black-eyed kids and discussing all of these, right, discussing all of these cases and these stories and how, you know, a lot of times they're seen in the R2 to 3 kids and they'll try to get into the home or they want to come in and use your phone or your restroom. And I got an email one night from a couple of local Minneapolis police saying, you know, Dave, we love your show. You're a late night show. We love to sit here and listen to it. We don't believe in the paranormal, never had any experiences. But tonight of all nights, 11:45, as you're wrapping up the show, and we're listening to all of these stories about the black-eyed kids, we get a call over the radio. And it's a call that there are three children, unknown children, standing in this person's front yard, and she'd like somebody to come check on it. Because my partner and I looked at each other, turned off our radio, and said, oh, hell no. So I love when you can get in the minds of the cops, and they don't even want to start dealing with this weirdness. Chicago, though, has a unique story. And I want to dig into this one because I think this is one of the great launching off story points. This was one of the stories that was related to me as a kid. I heard so much about it and that it transcended just urban legend in the fact that so many people had seen it. And at one point, there was actually some strange physical evidence left behind by Resurrection Mary. Can you kind of talk to us about that story? Tell us a little bit about Resurrection Mary.
Yeah, Resurrection Mary, as you mentioned, without a doubt, the most famous vanishing hitchhiker story in the world. And the reason she is so prevalent is that, again, she has so many eyewitness firsthand accounts. I just finished my book, Haunted Gary, Indiana, which will be out later this year, which has been very interesting to research. Actually researched a lot of it with cops in Gary. But they've got a pretty famous vanishing hitchhiker in Gary, the ghost of Klein Avenue. And it was so frustrating to me to research this book, especially this particular story, because there is no one who has had an experience with her. And here in Chicago, you know, we are spoiled because there's so many people that have had these eyewitness encounters with Resurrection Mary. Typically, and these accounts go back to at least the early 1930s, some as early as the late 1920s, gentlemen traveling along Archer Road, south of Chicago, late at night, usually about 1 o'clock in the morning, and he will pass by the gates of Resurrection Cemetery, large, huge Polish Catholic cemetery on the south side, and he'll, you know, pick up this woman along the side of the road who's just kind of wandering along the side of the road, usually wearing a wedding dress or a party dress of some sort, oftentimes with, you know, shoes on. He'll pull over, offer her a ride home, and she usually says nothing or says very little, gets in the car, and no sooner do they drive off than she either vanishes from the car or she yells to stop the car, usually right in front of the gates of Resurrection Cemetery, and she will jump out of the car and run right through the locked gates and vanish into the cemetery beyond. And it's such an interesting story because, again, there are so many people who have actually witnessed this themselves, and it continues to happen. The last person I talked to, just myself, who experienced this was last summer. There was, and this was a police officer as well, who worked in the western suburbs and lived in the area, and he had just gotten off of the expressway, 55, and was driving home along Archer Road, again, about 1 o'clock in the morning. He had gotten off of work at midnight, and lived in the area his whole life, knew very well the story of Resurrection Mary, but when he saw this woman walking along the side of the road, he said she was wearing a long white dress, and she looked like she was drenched, soaking wet, even though it wasn't raining. It looked like she had fallen into a pool or something. Pulled over, still in cop mode, you know, Miss, may I help you? Are you okay? Do you need a ride? She didn't say anything. She got in the car, pulled away from the curb, turned to just kind of look at her and size her up and down, and she had vanished by then. So these are stories that go on all the time with, again, very credible witnesses, a lot of police officers, firefighters, paramedics who have these experiences, you know, lending that credibility to the story. And they go on year after year. And again, very, very different from a lot of the other vanishing hitchhiker stories in the world, where it's always second or third hand accounts. These are first hand accounts and often very compelling.
Well, the one story that really sets you off, because, okay, again, these are perfect urban legendy type of stories. It's a lot of the people are, you know, I heard it from a friend's cousin who knew a neighbor of a guy who walked the dog for a fellow who saw the ghost, right? You always get these kind of second, third, fourth, fifth hand stories. But there was the very famous story of, you know, of course, the police have to respond. They get a lot of calls to seeing a young lady running through Resurrection Cemetery. But there is one night where there was actually something that can be considered physical evidence left behind. Can you tell us a little bit about that in the couple of minutes we have left here in this segment?
Yeah, it's amazing. Back in the 1970s, there was a man who was driving by the cemetery about 1 o'clock in the morning again, and he was distracted by a flash of something on that side of the road. And he saw that there was, as he passed the cemetery gates, there was a woman that was locked inside, and she was clutching the bars of the cemetery gate. Huge place. People get locked in all the time after closing time. He turned around, went to the police station back across the road. They called the caretaker to meet them at the front gate. When they met him there, there was absolutely no one there, but the bars that this woman had been clutching had been pried apart as if by some incredible force. And burnt into the bars were the imprints of what the police officers described as two delicate hands that were so, where the prints were so precise, you could actually see the fingerprints burned into the bronze bars. And there were thousands of people that came and saw these bars in the weeks that followed before the cemetery had the bars removed and sent away to be repaired. And you can still go there today and see a little bit of the imprint that's still left there, even though the bars have been repainted now. But that police officer, another guy, went on the show That's Incredible. Remember that show when we were kids back in the 70s? He went on That's Incredible and talked about what had happened, and he was fired for talking about it. It was very covered up and very hush-hush. And that was, again, something that was witnessed by thousands of people before those bars were removed.
Right, and it was causing traffic problems because people were actually pulling over to take a look at this remnant. And it had to be, now, the bars, were they made out of, what is it, brass?
Bronze.
And it was estimated insanely high amounts of temperature would have had to have heated up that bar in order to pull them apart. And then to actually have the little handprints burned into it, there's no human hand that should have been able to do that without leaving half of its flesh or bone on those bars.
Yeah, exactly.
I've found a picture online here of the bent bars with the burned handprints. I'll get those over to our webmaster Lex for Coast to Coast AM and see if I can get those posted on the website as well, so that we can have the different variations of the photographs. Very strange. We've got about 2 minutes left in this segment. Is there any reality to this story? Any way that we can back up that there is a woman that was killed that might fit the description of Resurrection Mary?
There's so many. Just in Resurrection Cemetery alone, the number of young Polish women named Mary who died in car accidents in the 20s and 30s leaves a whole host of possibilities. There are really two that have been narrowed down to over the years. One was the long-standing candidate, and that was Mary Bergovi, who was a factory worker who lived in the Back of the Yards neighborhood around 47th and Damon in the 1930s. And she died in a car accident, actually in the Loop, in March of 1934, and was buried at Resurrection. And the story about her began because some of her own classmates who were dancing at the old Willowbrook Ballroom, the O. Henry Ballroom, after her death, reported to police that they had seen their dead friend appear in the headlights of their car as they were driving home from the ballroom late at night. And so that's where I think the story of Resurrection Mary began, with that name, was definitely with Mary Bregovi. But in recent years, there is another young woman who has come to light, and that was a girl named Anna Norcus, who took the middle name of Maria, because she didn't have a middle name and she told her mom she wanted a middle name. So she took that name. So she was known as Maria, and she died on the eve of her 13th birthday, also in a car accident, after her father had taken her dancing at the Willowbrook Ballroom for her birthday. And she was buried in a temporary grave at Resurrection Cemetery because there was a gravedigger strike going on at the time.
So there are some... Yeah, there's some really interesting stories that revolve around the reality of what could be the real person behind Resurrection Mary. There's more stories about Resurrection Cemetery, more stories about Haunted Chicago to come up. Stay tuned. Ursula Bialski, our guest, here on Coast to Coast AM. Do you like ghost stories and things that go bump in the night? Do you like talking or listening about the supernatural, aliens, ghosts, monsters, psychic phenomena, angels, demons, and more, but you just don't know who to share these stories with, and you wish you had a special someone that you could involve yourself with to investigate these claims? Well, George Norrie listened. He heard what people are looking for, and he's put together ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com, you are not alone. You can go on, join up, find other like-minded individuals, friends, and possibly that special someone to spend your life investigating all claims of the supernatural. That's right, a dating site specifically for you, fans of the paranormal. Never been one like it before. Now it's out there, ParanormalDate.com. That's ParanormalDate.com. Go check it out and find out why thousands around the United States and now around the world are joining in to the number one paranormal dating site. Again, ParanormalDate.com. Check that out. And if you're looking for something fun and exciting to do as a couple and a place to go out and investigate and learn more about the paranormal, well, our guest Ursula Bialski might have something coming up for you. Ursula, tell us a little bit about the conference that's going to be coming up in October.
Oh, my gosh. This is going to be our 8th Chicago Ghost Conference, first weekend in October, and we're holding it this year at Chicago's Gaelic Park. This is a huge Irish-American Heritage Center on the southwest side of Chicago, and it is literally across the road from Bachelor's Grove. So people can actually walk across the road and through the woods to visit Bachelor's Grove Cemetery, one of the most haunted places in the world. And we are going to have so many incredible guests, of course, hosted by the great Dave Schrader.
Hey, and I know that guy.
Well, Jeff Belander, who's with us from New England Legends, and he's the location scout and writer for Ghost Adventures. We are going to have Virginia Madsen, the star of Candyman, and a great Chicagoan, to talk about filming Candyman here in Chicago with Cabrini Green. We're going to have the exorcist, Father Mike Maginot, who conducted the exorcisms on Latoya Ammons in Gary, Indiana, the Demon House. So we're going to have a lot of really great people, big paranormal expo, ghost box throwdown. We're going to have a big costume party at Seth's Melody Lounge right across from Resurrection Cemetery. And the whole weekend is just going to be full of really cool paranormal guests and paranormal teams and just a lot of really cool stuff. And everybody should come out to it. It's just a great time and a great place to meet a lot of like-minded people and have a lot of fun.
How can you sign up for that? Where do you find tickets and information?
You can go to ChicagoHauntings.com or ChicagoGhosts.com, and you'll find all the links to our conference page and be able to sign up for tickets.
And there's also all the great information about Ursula's books and her tours that take place every weekend. You can go find all that information at her website. Do that during the break. We'll be back with more. Find out more about Resurrection Mary, the haunted mausoleum at Resurrection Cemetery, and we're going to also talk about the very famous Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. I made a little jaunt there when I was a teenager, scared the living hell out of me. We'll find out why it's so haunted and what's been going on there next with our guest Ursula Bialski on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Dave Schrader, your host for the evening. I'll be back again with you tomorrow night as well. My first hour guest, Brad Meltzer, is back with us. And in hours 2, 3, and 4, brand new book out there called Drugs as Weapons Against Us, the CIA's murderous targeting of SDS, Panthers, Hendrix, Lennon, Cobain, Tupac, and others. John L. Potash, my guest tomorrow on Coast to Coast AM. This evening, the lovely and talented Ursula Bielski is with us, and we're talking about the haunted Windy City, Chicago's crazy ghost stories and folklore. And we were talking in the last segment about the very famous hitchhiking ghost Resurrection Mary and all of the stories revolving around her. I'm trying to get, I've got a couple of pictures of the bent bars, the brass bars that are burned with handprints into them and pulled apart. We're going to try to have those put up at the Coast to Coast AM website here during the show, so you can keep checking back to the site for updates on that. And talk to me now, the mausoleum out there, they've got a lot of really weird stories. I know I've talked to a few of the police officers out there. They used to get called a lot because lights will go on inside, the music will begin playing, and other strange things. Isn't that right?
Yeah, the mausoleum is incredible. Anybody in the area should really go and visit the mausoleum at Resurrection Cemetery. It's really astounding. It's really details a lot of Polish heritage. And it's got the largest stained glass window in the world. It's kind of amazing. It wraps around the entire building. But you're absolutely right. There are so many reports that have gone on since the building was built, with the lights being on in the middle of the night, the organ music playing in the middle of the night, figures seen around the building kind of trying to open the doors. A lot of activity around the mausoleum of Resurrection as well. So it's not just the story of Resurrection Mary. That's so interesting there. There's a lot of other activity that seems to go on at the building. But, of course, this is right on Archer Road, which is one of the most haunted roads in the world. And Resurrection Cemetery and Resurrection Mary are just part of this very haunted history of this stretch of road, which was originally an ancient Indian trail. And it came to international prominence in the mid-18th century because of the building of the Illinois and Michigan Canal, which linked up the Great Lakes with the Mississippi River. And so it opened up the trade routes between the Atlantic Ocean and the Gulf of Mexico. And the canal workers were almost exclusively Irish American immigrants that built the road out of the Bridgeport neighborhood in Chicago. And there were countless numbers of immigrants who died along this canal building route. There was very little money to fund the project, and there was hunger and thirst and disease and infighting along the road. And a lot of those dead were buried right where they died along the road. And many of them were also buried at the St. James Sag Churchyard at one end of Archer Road. And so we think a lot of the haunting of the road has to do with the building of the canal. And many researchers believe, too, that Archer Road might be a ley line and might have a lot of this inherent spiritual energy to begin with, going back hundreds of years.
Can you explain for listeners that may be unclear, do you understand the whole idea of ley lines? What exactly does that mean? And is there any real scientific backup to the idea of ley lines?
Yeah, I really believe so. Ley lines were first termed as such by a retired brewer named Alfred Watkins, who was doing a lot of bird watching in the English countryside back in the 1920s. And he discovered by talking to the people that he met on his outings that there was a lot of paranormal activity that would occur along these ancient roads or lines in the landscape that didn't go anywhere anymore. They went through fields or what have you, but they weren't actually roads anymore. So they were sort of these abandoned old tracks. And he wrote a book called The Old Straight Track, which talked about these lines in the landscape and this activity that would go on not only along these lines, but especially at the intersections of them, which he called nodal points. And he found by talking to people all over the world that in every culture, there are these ancient paths that go through the environment in countries all over the world, including the United States, and that along these lines, there is a lot of paranormal activity that occurs. And this led to the theory that that ancient peoples all over the world put their roads down along lines in the landscape that they believed to have spiritual energy or a lot of life force. And you'll find around the world that the native trails in the United States, the Indian trails, will have a lot of this paranormal activity going on along them. And I believe it's true. In Chicago, you know, all of our city was relaid down or redesigned after the Great Fire wiped the city out. And what we're known for around the world, among many things, is that our city is on the so-called grid system, which means that all the streets go very evenly north and south and east and west. And this has, of course, been copied by city planners all around the world since then. But you can still see in Chicago where the ancient Indian trails were, because they're the diagonal streets that were left for ease of travel, even after our city was relayed out on this grid system. And you'll find in Chicago that, you know, Archer Road and Lincoln Avenue and Milwaukee Avenue and Green Bay Road, these are all the ancient Indian trails. And there are a lot of ghost stories along these roads, an inordinate amount. And you'll find this around the world on these ancient paths.
That's fascinating when you look at this, and that there is some kind of energetic trail it almost seems to follow. And when you look at some of the most haunted places on Earth, they all seem to follow into this pattern. And it's not just like they're willy-nilly lines all over. They're almost mathematically laid out. And then you follow those trail lines. And I believe even Disneyland, the original Disneyland, they say, was placed on what was a ley line. And they believe that might be part of the power and the source of the popularity of it, is because of the energetic source of it. It's just so fascinating. I love that aspect.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Now, aside from Resurrection Mary possibly being one of the most famous hitchhiking and dancing ghosts, because I also hear that some of the times she was actually meeting guys in the club and she would dance with them at Willowbrook, correct?
It's true. And the Willowbrook Ballroom is still in operation today. I think it's one of the only operating ballrooms still in the United States today. And it is still a place where people will have these encounters. And not only at the Willowbrook, but at other different old taverns and old nightclubs and ballrooms around the south side of Chicago, people will still have these encounters with this young woman who seems, you know, rather cold socially and also physically to the touch, doesn't say much, she's very aloof, and at the end of the evening will ask for a ride home, but nobody can quite, you know, get her to the locations where she's going. But these incidents still go on today too at various places around the South Side, including the Willowbrook Ballroom, where she has, you know, believed to have danced her last dance in life.
Now, she's not the only famous dancing spirit, right? Isn't there a story of a crazy cloven hoof fella that spent an evening or two dancing with the ladies in Chicago?
Yeah, this is one of the oldest ghost stories in Chicago, and this takes place in the Bridgeport neighborhood, which we talked about just a moment ago. The Bridgeport neighborhood is one of the oldest neighborhoods in Chicago, and it was the point of settlement for all the Irish-American immigrants that came to Chicago in the early part of the 1800s. And there's a story that goes back to the late 19th century, turn of the 19th century, in which there was there's a building down on Archer, actually. It's kind of right by the inception point of Archer Avenue in Chinatown, where it's called Kaiser Hall still today. And it was originally built by German immigrants that ran a butcher shop on the first floor. And there were apartments on the second floor. On the third floor was a ballroom called Kaiser Hall. And every Saturday night in the late 19th century, early 20th century, there was a dance. A band would play, and all the neighborhood young people would come to dance. Well, very famously, there was one evening, probably around 1912, where there was a dance on Saturday night, and all the usual people from the neighborhood were there, but there was also this dashing stranger that had arrived, and all of the young women in the neighborhood, of course, took a shine to him, but he had eyes for one young girl alone, and kept dancing with her every song that would play, and they would start dancing faster and faster, and it seemed to the people present that the orchestra would actually play faster as the night went on, and they would whirl about the room, when finally he danced her right through one of the arched windows that faced Archer Road. And they went through the window, this is on the third floor, and everyone, of course, rushed to the window to see if they had survived the fall. And the girl was lying unconscious, but the dashing stranger had jumped up, he had landed on his feet, and he went running across Archer Avenue and disappeared between two buildings across the street. Well, according to legend, everyone rushed downstairs, and they found that where the dashing stranger had landed on his feet, there were two hoof prints embedded in the sidewalk where he had landed. And I've talked to people when I was starting out, you know, 30 years ago, that grew up in the neighborhood and said that those hoof prints were there for years and years until they report the sidewalk on that street. And they said that they talked to the young woman who survived, and she said that she had been dancing and she had, you know, let out a scream when she saw that this gentleman had hooves instead of feet. And this is a story that was actually tied to Hull House, which you mentioned in the beginning of this evening, in which the so-called devil baby was born in probably 1913. Jane Addams, who ran Hull House, is one of the first kind of community centers or places of social work in the United States, wrote about the devil baby coming to Hull House. And this was this diabolical child that had been born to an immigrant couple around the corner in the Italian neighborhood around the corner, Taylor Street. And many researchers tie the story of the devil baby at Hull House to the night that the devil came to dance at Kaiser Hall, believing that possibly this young woman that was living at Hull House, having been taken in by Jane Addams, had gone to a dance there that night and had had some sort of diabolical liaison with this dashing stranger before she fell out the window. So some very interesting folklore down there in Bridgeport. Again, one of the oldest neighborhoods in Chicago, and these stories have lasted many, many generations.
In the part that kind of fascinates me about this as well is the fact that a lot of ghost stories and folklore stories like that all seem to have some kind of moral to it, like they're teaching you a lesson or these, but these stories don't. The stories of Resurrection Mary and the Cloven Hoof Dancer, it's not like there was some lesson to be learned by this. It was simply a part of fact, a part of a story that just existed, and you either believed it or you didn't believe it, and it was just accepted for what it was. Isn't that fascinating when you look at those ghost stories and the folklore from that area? There is no sense of parable to them.
Well, that's just it. It's very frustrating to me and has been for many years that, you know, that folklorists do not believe in ghosts at all. For them, everything is, yeah, it's a lesson. It's a way for people to communicate these lessons and these warnings and societal things. And when you really get in there and look at these experiences that happen and the stories that people tell, these are real stories that happen to people and real experiences that people have. And folklorists just, they look for some sort of lesson in these things, some sort of societal structure that's going on, and it's not there at all. These are actual things that are happening to people and experiences that people are having. And so, yeah, it's very frustrating. It's the very famous urban legend historian John Brunvand, who's written I don't know how many books about folklore and urban legends. And, you know, he wrote the story, he wrote many accounts of the story of the devil in the dance hall from South America. He's written many accounts of the stories of vanishing hitchhikers around the world. And we'll talk about that. There's no eyewitnesses to these experiences. They're all third and fourth hand accounts, and doesn't even listen when you write to them and you tell them, no, there's first hand accounts. This happens to people. That's not part of how they see everything. They think that all of these things fit nicely into this whole idea that these are all legends, you know, based on our warnings to each other or lessons that we're supposed to learn. And it's not that way at all.
That we've only got a minute or two left in this segment, but I'm just curious, with all of the stories of Resurrection Mary and hitchhiking ghosts and things like this, has there ever been any, you know, skullduggery and chicanery going on, people dressed up in white dresses, hitchhiking and trying to scare it, that's ended in tragedy as well?
Oh, well, that has become, you know, that's become a big problem on Archer Road, of course. You know, especially around Halloween every year, people dressing up like Resurrection Mary and walking along the side of the road. And there's been a couple incidents that were near-death incidents where people were hit trying to replicate this appearing in the road in front of oncoming cars, as Resurrection Mary has, you know, has been wanting to do. So, yeah, that's been kind of an epidemic on Archer Road, as you know, as in a lot of places around the world where these hitchhikers have been reported.
Yeah, because I got to guess that that's, especially in this day and age with the popularity of the paranormal, people are just begging for problems with that, right? I mean, there's so many people out there trying to spook each other and have these situations. So you've got to be careful when you're investigating these claims. Have you yourself seen anything out there by Resurrection Cemetery or Resurrection, that little triangle area?
Yeah, you know, I've had experiences there of, you know, hearing real-time audio apparitions or what have you at different cemeteries in that area. My daughter Eva, who you know well, she was on one of our Archer Avenue tours just about 2 years ago and saw, you know, what she described as a woman in a white dress that was standing by the cemetery gates as we drove by. And you know her, she's dyed-in-the-wool ghost hunter and doesn't imagine things or anything like that. And she was very shaken up by what she saw. It's very unusual, you know, that this is part of the folklore, is that women do not tend to see Resurrection Mary.
Yeah, it seems to be more focused for the men. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll hear the legend and lore of the famous Bachelor's Grove Cemetery next on Coast to Coast AM.